Michael showing up here. Chris Black. Legendary producer.
Yeah.
Just dropped in to say hi. Socially distanced.
Of course.
Wearing a mask, so everything's good.
Foghorn. So you can be far away and still hear somebody.
That's good.
Oh, yeah.
It's Baseball Central. It is Blair and Barker. Well, we saw Steven Matz. And lots to get excited about, even though it was the Texas Rangers. Well, let's not say lots to get excited about. He did. That's not a very good lineup.
Don't poo-poo on it.
I mean, let's see how that stuff plays against the Angels.
Hey, baby steps.
Yeah, I know.
Hey.
What'd you make of Steven Matz? It's a fair number of strikeouts. And
Starting with strikeouts. Yesterday when we left the show, I said, you asked me what Steven Matz needs to do. And it was the obvious things. You know, his Zoom call, what did he say? He said he commanded the fastball glove side, which means into righties, away to lefties. Early on in the game yesterday, that's what he did.
Yep.
Right? He was getting after him with heaters. He's throwing strike one. You know, you can compete a little bit better when you're pitching ahead. I mentioned you got to dominate left-handers. Lefties against him in yesterday's game were 1-for-10 with 6 strikeouts.
Yes.
That's dominant. Any good starting left-handed pitcher in baseball dominates left-handed hitters. It's almost like a little cruise control. Oh, lefty's coming up. I can just nibble here a little bit. I can expand with a secondary pitch. I can get an easy, quick out. Now I have to battle against a right-handed hitter. Check mark. You know, coming into this thing, was it tipping his pitches? Was it mental? Was it location? Was it a combination of all three of those things? Yesterday we saw him make an in-game adjustment. You know, all the things you could read about him. You know, you do homework when a guy shows up and, you know, all you ever hear is he's got great stuff and can never really put it together. But then you started reading a little bit more, and they would always say when he falls off a cliff, he falls off the cliff. Well, fourth inning yesterday, he could have fallen off the cliff, started doing that. He battled through it. And then you could see between innings, Petey gave him what I thought, what I was looking at, and what I could tell. You know, he was giving that breaking ball sign. What do you have to do, Jeff, to throw a good breaking ball? You got to get extension, and you really got to bite that off. You got to have good tunneling, and you got to be really falling off towards your target, right? Fourth inning there, it looked to me like he was falling off towards the third base side. You just need that pitching coach to walk up and go, hey, think about when you throw your breaking ball, what you have to do. You know, you're not going to throw a bunch of breaking balls. I don't want you to do that because of the scoreboard. I still want you to pound. But think about it. Think about that's what you have to do to all your pitches to get you back into your lane and in your tunneling and falling towards your target and those kind of things. So I love the little in-game adjustment he made. But I'm with you. You know, his next start will be the third game in Dunedin against the Angels. That's a veteran right-handed lineup. That's a small ballpark. He's going to have those hard takes. And what I mean by hard take is that thing is strike, 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 ball. And that hitter is like, he's just working at it to, do I swing at it? Don't I swing at it? Yesterday, we didn't see a ton of that. And that gets to your point about the lineup. You know, those lineups that you really have to bear down to that are going to force you on the plate and make you throw quality pitches, that's going to be a good test for him. Well, not only the ballpark, but the lineup he's going to face.
I got to say this about Steven Matz, first of all. 6 1/3 innings. We only saw that happen, what, once last year?
Yeah.
A Jays starter pitched into the 7th inning. He had 9 strikeouts. Final 4 batters he faced were strikeouts. So he got that rare little taste of the third time through. Little taste of the third time through. And then of course, Charlie went to the bullpen.
You wonder why they wanted him to pitch against the Rangers and not the Yankees. Want him to get off to that hot, confident start. That seems to be the little bit of an issue with him. Now, again, I haven't been around him enough, and I have never talked to him because we are, for obvious reasons. No,
that's fair.
But it's, you know, whatever the reason could be, it's where he – you know, was trying to pitch in, you know, his hometown, trying too hard. There was always family watching. You know, different people handle that in different ways. They handle struggling in different ways. Sometimes it's just better to go away and do your job. And maybe this going away will help him, you know. But, you know, it's a great start. The one walk is a big deal. That's you. I know he hit a batter, the left-handed batter. That's, again, you're pounding the zone. Guy's got to dive out over the plate. Sometimes you might hit somebody.
Listen, considering the fact you have won starts by T.J. Zoik and Steven Matz early in the year, if the Jays are going to go to the postseason, there's going to have to be little, yeah, we're going to have to take a long view, but we're also going to have to take the short view. And the short view right now is the rotation is not settled. Until we get Robbie Ray back, until you see what Nate Pearson is, the rotation is unsettled. I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying it's better than I think it is or it's worse than other people think it is. But it's safe to say that it's unsettled right now. And through four games, you've had wins out of a guy who's, as you said, fell off a cliff last year.
Yeah.
And another guy in TJ Zoik that at the start of spring training, if I said to you, hey, Barker, you know who's going to pitch the third game at Yankee Stadium? TJ Zoik. He would have looked at me and said, you're full of bleep. So,
yeah,
it's a process. Yeah, you've got to look at the long term, but you've also got to take care of what's in front of you right now. And if the Jays are picking and choosing spots for Steven Matz, that's fine.
That's okay. And remember, when we were talking about where I thought the Blue Jays were going to go, and I said they're going to win 90 games and make a playoff spot. Did I not say that?
Yes.
I did say that, but I said what needs to happen? The bottom feeder teams, those 44 games, the Rangers, Kansas City, Seattle, Detroit, and the 19 against the Orioles, they got to go 34-10 or 35-9 to have a chance in doing that.
Yep.
Well, one win is in the book. So you build off that, you have confidence. And look, you can tell. You know what I like also about this team? That they make adjustments quicker now.
We talked about that. Bo made an adjustment with his throwing.
Yep. You can't lollipop it over there. It's not going to work. You don't have a strong enough arm to do that. Rear bag and let it eat. Do your first baseman a favor. He's getting his feet wet over there. He doesn't really know how to work his feet around the bag.
I wonder how much of that too is also Bichette being aware of the fact that he does have to help his first baseman out. I'm not sticking up for one guy over another here, but I'm just saying. Look, those guys know that Vladdy is learning the position, and especially since they're so close, especially since they're friends as well as teammates, I got to think it's in the back of his head that he wants to be perfect for Vladdy. He wants his throw to Vladdy to be perfect, so Vladdy doesn't have to, look bad.
I think that's
very much a part of this.
I would say a little bit of that, but it's sports. Is a me first
sure.
sport, and if you are,
but
looking
it's understandable
like you're not supposed to look. I would say a little bit of that's Louis Rivera, the third base / infield coach, walked up to him after the first game, went, "Hey, that's not what we worked on.
Mm-hmm.
Get your feet set, chuck it over there, let it eat. Don't be afraid. You got a strong enough arm that when you let it eat, it's got some line on it. Doesn't have the big hump in it. You don't want to bounce the ball. He may have mentioned, "Hey, you do know who's playing first." He didn't say his name. You don't have to tell everybody that Vladdy's still learning how to use his feet over there. Help him out a little bit.
590-590 is the text line if you want to get in part of the conversation. Home runs from Kevin Biggio, Marcus Semien.
Hit the heater. We talked about this until we were blue in the face last year about why don't they look for heaters. Well, maybe they can't hit a fastball. That may have been one of the reasons. But you got a guy now leading off. What do you put George Springer in front of him? That 1-2 punch, knowing a guy has to locate a fastball. You can put an easy run on the board. I like him. It's short and quick. It's easy. Not a ton to it.
A little bit of breaking news here. This makes me smile.
Yeah, I saw that. This means nothing.
Let me finish. But it's good because, well, of course, the Jays won't be playing in Toronto for a while anyhow. The New York Yankees are finalizing a trade to acquire Rougned Odor from the Texas Rangers, according to our friend Jeff Passan. Texas will absorb almost the entirety of the $27 million owed to Odor. He gets $12 million this year, $12 million next year, is a $3 million buyout on a $13 million club option in 2023. So the only thing I think for Jays fans that would be better than this is if Odor was with the Orioles and Buck Showalter was still managing.
Where is he playing for the Yankees?
Well, it's just depth. I mean, have you noticed the Yankees have a habit of getting hurt?
I guess.
Yeah. Now that is, well, and of course, Texas is picking up the money as well.
Maybe if Jay Bruce is not, Jay Bruce of 5 years ago, you put DJ LeMahieu at first base, you put Odor at second base, that could be, that short porch and right, they're trying to catch lightning in a bottle. Yeah. It could hit 200, but you could hit 20 plus.
And look, it's free. It's free. Texas is paying 26. You're basically someone else is paying you $27 million to have a guy that
what's
coming
tell
off
you
your
about
bench.
Odor that you paid $27 million to get rid of him. You don't even want to see him play.
Yeah, but you know what? We need to see what Texas gets in return. It's the old story, right? If you pay all that money to get rid of a dude, the more money you pay to get rid of a dude, the more you should be getting in return. Anyhow, we'll see where that goes.
That ever work that way?
Anyhow, Rougned Odor, according to Jeff Passan, a deal being finalized with the Yankees to trade Odor from the Texas Rangers. And it's funny because we're joined by Chris Woodward, manager of the Texas Rangers. And Chris, thanks for doing this. I swear to God, this was what I was going to ask you. Okay, I wrote this out a little bit, figuring out how am I going to get into this interview with Chris Woodward. And I was going to say, you know, I looked at that team, Chris, and I thought, my God, there's a lot of turnover from the Rangers teams that we remember playing the Blue Jays teams and that great rivalry. And you know, I was going to mention Rougned Odor, but obviously now I don't have to as part of that. Just my first question in general, can you talk about this deal? Has it been done? And I understand that a lot of what you guys are trying to do this season, I think, is to try to create the beginnings of continuity, right? You want to sort of get the foundation set to move forward, but just how hard is that for a manager?
For sure. Yeah. And I can't confirm that, obviously that deal is official yet until it becomes official. But, yes, I think to answer your question, there has been a lot of turnover, and, for the last 3 years, you know, we've really, pushed hard on implementing a culture and an identity about what we want to be as we move forward. And I think last year, obviously, you know, we didn't play well, but there was a lot of internal commitment to kind of what we were doing. And obviously, you see the team we have now. We're young. We know we got to develop. We know we got to improve every day. And these guys are 100% on board with that. So obviously, we're looking to improve on a daily basis and address some things. And you know, from a staff standpoint and a team standpoint, like, our culture is number one. And, you know, we obviously are looking for guys that fit that mold and that want to be part of that and build around those guys.
That's a lot of personalities you guys have seen walk through the clubhouse door, though, in the past couple of years, isn't it? And I get what you're saying about clubhouse culture, and obviously it, you know, players age as well, Chris, but how much of a shock is it to you? I'm not going to put it that way. But how hard is it for you as a manager to kind of keep guys up? Guys see guys going out of the clubhouse, guys they may have known for a while, or guys who certainly have made their mark with the Texas Rangers?
Yeah, it's tough. I think that's, you know, it's part of the game. And, you know, if you play this game long enough, there's going to be some, obviously, turnover. We're hoping to have a little less turnover, obviously, as we go. You know, obviously there are some guys that have been here a while that, you know, we kind of, you know, moved on, not because, you know, maybe they were, you know, not as, I guess, you know, performance based, not as good on the field as they were in the past, or maybe we just wanted to kind of, you know, change direction and give some younger guys a chance in those spots. And I think more of the latter, honestly, with regard to some of the guys we've recently let go. So it is. It's tough, but that's part of sports. I think that's the beauty of, especially in my position, being able to manage a bunch of different personalities and allowing guys to be themselves. But at the same time, you know, demanding that they live up to the standards and the expectations that we set, you know, in the clubhouse and in the organization. And I think that, you know, we have a tremendous group of guys that are all different. There's no question. They all have different personalities and you know, different characters. But at the same time, they all obviously align in the same direction when it comes to, you know, the style of play, you know, what they're expected to be in the clubhouse as far as teammates go and what they're expected from a work standpoint. And so it's a great dynamic, and it's part of, you know, what makes sports intriguing, because you get all these guys from, especially in our game, with so many different cultures. They all come together and have a common purpose.
Every team, I'm assuming, is handling their pitching different after the 60-game season last year. Tonight, you have Dane Dunning is your number three prospect in your organization. Is it gloves off for a guy like that? Is it you're going to monitor how many innings he's throwing, how many pitches, stress innings, those kind of things? How are you going to handle it this year?
Yeah, it's tough because we need to take care of our guys. You know, Dane only you know, through however many innings he threw last year and in the past. We got to take care of our players, especially the younger guys. Do we want to see them kind of go out there and, you know, like you said, take the gloves off? Absolutely, at some point. But I think early on we're gonna really monitor them, see how they're feeling, maybe limit them a little bit early on. Not saying that they can't go out and go seven scoreless, but, you know, just, you know, like you said, measuring their innings and making sure that if they have tough, you know, I guess high leverage innings and, you know, really, you know, taxing innings, that we keep an eye on that and we take care of them, because this is probably the most at risk, you know, pitchers have been in our game because of last year and because of the, you know, the quick buildup to the season last year and only 60 games, limited number of innings. Everybody across the league understands that pitchers are more at risk this year than probably any other year in the history of our game.
Now, Chris, I'm intrigued by the way you guys, at least initially, seem to be going with tandem starters for two turns, you know, in the rotation. Can you tell us a little bit about sort of how that developed, how that idea developed? Is it something that, I know Chris Young is part of the organization now? Is it something he had a hand in? And how do you decide who to pair up? Like, tonight is Dane Dunning and Taylor Hearn, right?
Yeah. And, I mean, if everything goes well, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Knock on wood. And Saturday you had Jordan Lyles and I think Wes Benjamin. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
So how do you, yeah. What is the thought process behind determining who goes where?
Well, we kind of obviously internally, we had talked about this after last year, especially with, you know, the younger pitchers that we wanted to kind of give a chance to. And I think, and I've said this before, I think Jordan Lyles is kind of the outlier in there, that we don't really have a limit on Jordan.
Okay.
Jordan just had kind of a, you know, not a year that he would, you know, obviously he didn't perform as well as he'd like last year, but he made a ton of adjustments. And he's a guy that I think will materialize into a regular starter at some point, maybe sooner than later, to be honest with you, the way he pitched the other day. But the other guys, it's more about, you know, controlling their innings and making sure that we don't want to get in the situation where, you know, Dane Dunning has too many innings in July and we have to shut him down. We don't want to do that. We obviously got to be really mindful of how many innings he throws and how many pitches he throws per outing. And the best way to do that, obviously, we're, you know, at times limit him and, you know, keep him to a, you know, a lower, you know, maximum pitch limit. That way, you know, we get a guy behind him. We can kind of, you know, obviously, like I said, pair up two guys to basically take the bulk of that game. And it obviously gives us a chance to maximize their performance. I think in shorter stints, you know, we can tell these guys just go out and throw everything they got from pitch one, as opposed to trying to get through 100 pitches, you know, like they maybe would do if they were a traditional starter. So it just because we start off this way doesn't mean we're going to finish this way. Obviously, it's something that it's going to be a fluid situation, and we're going to adjust accordingly if guys are pitching better or worse, and put them in different roles.
Okay, I've never asked an opposing manager this, and I don't want you to give away state secrets. But what is the Texas Rangers scouting report versus the Blue Jays, if you can tell us?
I don't want to give our strategy away. Listen, Toronto, you guys have a good team.
Yeah.
There's a good young core of players, especially on the position player side. They're aggressive. So, you know, we got to be careful, you know, with too many balls in the middle of the plate. We know they're going to be aggressive swingers, and it makes it a little bit challenging to pitch to at times because – you know, if you pitch around the strike zone, then they get an advantage counts and they can do some damage. But I think we got to attack them, and that's something we got to stick with our strengths and attack them, make them hit our pitches. And on the pitching side, you know, I think the back end of the bullpen has some pretty good arms. Just needless to say, we had Jordan Romano, you know, a few years ago, so we know what he's all about. And you know, we just got to stay in the strike zone. I think with the obviously the Blue Jay pitchers, there's some power stuff back there, but we got to make sure we stay in the strike zone and do the same thing to the starters. And hopefully we can we know Ryu's tough. Hopefully we can do some things against Roark today. But listen, they're all quality pitchers, and you know, we got to make sure we stay stubborn in the strike zone so we can hopefully get some pitches to hit and do some damage.
In conversation with Texas Rangers manager Chris Woodward, what can you tell our listeners about Isaiah Kiner Falefa? Because he's, you know, the moves that he has made, you know, there are guys that win a gold glove might not be all that thrilled with having to shift position, especially when they move from another position to win that gold glove. He's certainly not afraid, though, is he, to take a new challenge?
No, and I think, you know, there's some really, we can talk about Kiner for hours because he, in my opinion, is the epitome of what we want. from all of our players, you know, on either side of the ball. And, you know, especially on the position player side, this kid does not take a pitch off. He's a relentless competitor. You can't tell him he can't do something. He's been told that his whole life. And he's defied the odds and proved people wrong his whole life. And he feeds off of that. He thrives off of that. There's nobody that loves playing baseball more than this kid. And I was honored, honestly, to give him the opportunity to play shortstop. He told me a couple of years ago when I sent him down, and this is after he had, you know, tried to catch. Mm-hmm. The organization asked him to try to catch after being an infielder his whole career. Really good infielder, by the way. And clearly after winning Gold Glove last year at third base, but tried to catch and, you know, listen, he gave it everything he had. We made the decision to kind of pull that, stop that and get him back in the infield. And, you know, we sent him down and he told me in my office that he was the best shortstop the organization had. And it was a bold statement at the time that I thought, wow, I've never seen this kid play shortstop. It'd be interesting to see how this, so we, you know, we sent him down. He was only down for like a week, got called back up and got to see him take ground balls every day. And, you know, I was intrigued by that statement. And, you know, after watching him play last year at third base, played shortstop for 2 or 3 weeks last year, you know, when Elvis went down and did really well. And so I thought, man, what a great opportunity to show the organization. This is what we are all about. This is the intensity we want. This is the commitment. This is the work at drive, everything, the hunger to be great. And, you know, to give him that opportunity, like I said, speaks volumes to the organization and to him. He put in the work, and this kid is he is a savage competitor, and I love, and that's why I put him at the top of the lineup.
Last question.
That's the tone for us every day.
Last question before he lets you run. You managed a game in front of 40-odd thousand, 38,000 fans yesterday. What was that like?
It was something we hadn't seen in a long time, so it was exciting. Obviously, you guys kind of stole the show and didn't give our fans much to cheer about, but it was fun, honestly. And I know that there's, nothing is black and white these days, and there's a lot of gray area, and whether that was the right thing or, but I thought it was good for the game and honestly good for the world to kind of see that. And hopefully nothing comes of that, and hopefully the fans were responsible in the stands. I didn't really look around too much during the game. But I know it was exciting, and it was exciting to kind of see some sense of normalcy. And hopefully we can get back to there soon. You know, if people are getting vaccinated and we feel like we're okay as a, you know, as a society to kind of allow that to happen again, because it was, it's why we all, you know, started playing when we were little, you know, that, that feeling that, you know, 40,000 people, and it was fun. It was a really exciting time.
Chris, really good of you to do this. Thanks so much. You know we value your time. Stay safe, and best of luck this year, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care. That is Chris Woodward, former Toronto Blue Jay and manager of the Texas Rangers. Mm-hmm. And the two-tandem pitcher thing intrigues me, because I think that's what these guys are going to have to do with Nate Pearson ultimately. Anyway, you know what? We're going to take a break. We'll talk about it on the other side. 590-590's the text line. You got something you want to say? Rougned Odor is back in the American League East with the New York Yankees. You're right, by the way, about it does appear as if the Yankees are kind of buying themselves some insurance against Jay Bruce. In other words, Odor could play second and LeMahieu could play first. That according to some of the New York writers anyhow. We'll take a deeper dive into that deal. We'll talk about the tandem starter situation, and we will talk about Fernando Tatis Jr.'s shoulder injury last night, swinging the bat, and the initial indications, even though he's going for an MRI tomorrow, the initial indications are not good, at least everything we're hearing out of the San Diego Padres. So lots to talk about. It's Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. $590 is our text line. Several folks weighing in, including Tom in Toronto, saying that Rougned Odor is going to have to shave that awful beard to be a Yankee. Rougned Odor and $27 million going from the Rangers to the Yankees, or TBD, to be determined, or as of yet not reported. And Rougned Odor, that swing, that stadium, why not? And I think you're right. It's the idea of adding Odor opens the possibility of DJ LeMahieu playing some first base, given that Jay Bruce is there right now. Yeah. It buys him a little bit of insurance against any setback to Luke Voit. And the other thing, Odor, unlike Jay Bruce, Odor can play three or four positions for you if you want.
Oh, he can stand at three or four positions.
Or he can stand, correct.
He's left-handed.
And he's left-handed.
And they are really right-handed dominant. And the issue they've had in the playoffs is what? They're easier to pitch to. A good pitcher can get them out because they're really right-handed. You know, you catch lightning in a bottle, he gets hot for 2 weeks. I'm not saying he could carry your team, but he could hit a big three-run homer against a tough right-handed pitcher.
Yeah. Ineo and Richmond Hill wants to know who we think will get sent down if George Springer gets activated Thursday. We'll talk about that in a minute because I got some thoughts on that. But I want to remind you that to celebrate the Blue Jays home opener on Thursday, we're giving away more Blue Jays prize packs this week. You can listen for the secret player names every day and text them to 590-590 to enter. Give you a chance to win a Blue Grit kit, which includes all sorts of Blue Jays merchandise, such as face masks, T-shirts, and discount codes for jerseys. So text Hernandez to 590-590 right now to enter. Again, that's Hernandez to 590-590 right now to enter. For full contest details, go to sportsnet.ca. Also, don't forget to download the MLB Ballpark app. Allows you to play games and keep up with the Blue Jays. Be sure to tune into the home opener. That's Thursday at 6:30 p.m. that our coverage will begin on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. George Springer is eligible to be activated. He will be doing a media availability in a few minutes, an hour and a half, I guess. So maybe we'll get a sense from him when he expects to be back. Before we decide, I think, what has to happen here, we need to see what Danny Jansen's status is. Took a ball off the knee yesterday. Yep. I think, as Charlie Montoyo said, if Danny Jansen leaves the game, then, you know, it's not just a knock. Let's put it that way. It's not just a knock. So we'll see where he is with that. We know that Riley Adams is at the alternate site. So is Juan Graterol at the alternate site as well.
Yeah. Riley Adams is on the travel squad.
Oh, he's on the, okay. I take that back. He's on the taxi squad. You are right.
Yeah.
So he would be there.
You would
think maybe.
So. I mean, they like him. He's a big target. He's a halfway decent blocker. You know, the game calling thing, John Snyder's good enough that he can give him fingers and write it on that little pad.
We'll know soon what Jansen's status is, right? Because Ryu starts tomorrow, and that's the pairing.
Yeah, if I were picking a person that got sent down when George comes back, it'd be Trent Thornton. That would be my guess.
Okay.
I don't really know what purpose Trent Thornton serves just right now. Like, they got enough guys that can give you a quality inning and a half out of the bullpen.
And you want to Thornton get him stretched out, don't you? Don't you want to get Trent Thornton stretched out?
What is Trent Thornton? If Trent Thornton makes 20 starts for the Blue Jays at the big league level, the seasons went a different direction than you want it to go.
I mean, I'm trying to think.
No offense to Trent Thornton.
I'm trying to think of who else will go down. You don't want to send
Jonathan Davis would be the next, because you can't have how many outfielders. You know, Jonathan Davis, what purpose is he serving? Again, it is, you know, his biggest asset is his legs. Sometimes what you're seeing now is, you know, we did see him with Marcus Semien at the plate with two outs, him trying to steal third with two strikes. Now, you're already in scoring position. That's another note at the big league level. There's only so many times you can do that and get away with it. So that's, you know, he's a great human, and I'm a big fan. But when you got a limited time of playing, you got to represent. You got to say, you know, I'm thinking first. At this level, everybody's athletic. Everybody here, they're the best athlete most of the time that they got in their organization. They're playing at this level. The thinkers separate themselves from the great athletes. And Jonathan Davis is one of those guys that got to go, hey, listen. Now, that guy just hit a home run earlier in the game. I'm standing on second. Any ball hit to the outfield, I'm fast enough because I get good enough jumps. I'm going to score. Why would I try and steal third base? No reason. So it's little situations like that, you know, will make a manager go, you know, do I really want to pinch run him in the eighth inning? Those are the kind of things. So when it comes crunch time and you're picking, you pick the guy that's going to help your team and it's not going to help your team. And, you know, do you need five outfielders? And do you need Trent Thornton?
What are we going to do with Roddy Tellez? Not that you're going to send him down, but what are we going to do with Rowdy Tellez? Looks like he's swinging
You're playing a hot hand. Right now, you know, if Randall Grichuk is playing, for me, you're playing a hot hand. Randall's streaky. He's one of them streaks. But I will say about Randall, Randall's two-strike approach is impressive. He's choked up. His bat's quicker because of that.
We've seen
he's
this before with him.
He's using his lower half. He's streaky. You know, he's a notorious slow starter, too. And for some reason or the other, he's gotten off to a good start. You ride that hot hand. That's what I mentioned yesterday to you. When George comes back in Dunedin. Why not put George in right field? Play the hot hand, put Randall in center. DH to Oscar. Keep your assets on the field. Easiest way to do that, let George play. George's comfortable in right field. I know he can play center, whatever. But he's more comfortable in right field. He's a better right fielder.
He's a better right fielder.
You know it, and yeah. I know it.
So everybody knows it.
That's you put him there. You put Randall. You play the hot hand until Randall's not hot anymore. And then that's right now you're trying to get off to a good start. You're playing some teams that you probably should be beating. And the guy that's hot is playing for me. And if Rowdy's not hot right now, Rowdy's going to get 450 at-bats this year.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to find out at the end of the season what Rowdy is. Rowdy's a big leaguer, Rowdy ain't a big leaguer. That's what you got to figure out.
I'm just trying to see here who the Angels are going to run out against the Jays.
It ain't good. Let's say that.
No, but I'm just...
Their strength's not pitching.
Okay, so Andrew Heaney. So they're going to get a right-hander, Griffin Canning, in the first game. You're going to get a left-hander, Andrew Heaney, in the second game. And then it's TBD. But I'm just looking at that as...
Two righties?
No, a righty in game one, Griffin Canning, and then a lefty, Andrew Heaney, in Friday's game. So what I'm saying is I'm just looking ahead. If Rowdy's scuffling...
It's all about where George wants to play, for me. If George comes back that first game...
And says, I want to be in center field...
Then you figure out how to work that in. Again, it's, you know, Teoscar. You want a DH Teoscar? Me, personally, I'm not giving Teoscar days off. Department thing is, you know... Thinking 10 games ahead and figuring a day off for an everyday player's DH name. That's how you give him a day off. Play, you know, you're trying to win games. Get a little separation.
Yeah.
Put your best lineup out there. Like the Lord is getting a day off, really. You two games in.
Come on. Yeah, you don't know.
I get it.
We don't know whether or not a guy is.
I guess.
Has got something. We just don't. I understand with the high performance department. I mean, they've got all their strength tests and everything, and they've got their.
I'd have never played.
Their measurements.
You know that, right? I would have never played.
Oh, you would have just flexed.
Because me doing hang cleans and deadlifts and stretching. He asked me to stretch once. Yeah. I did yoga once and got hung, and somebody had to get me loose.
No, my.
Yeah, what? Like putting legs across each other. Yeah, because I'm a big man. Need some help to get out of it. Didn't do that again.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I'm just saying, though, I'm going to throw that out there, that we're not privy to all the information.
You seen the lineup today? Is he playing?
Not seen the lineup today yet.
If Lourdes is playing today, what you would think?
Not seen the lineup today
I'm
yet.
Saying.
Tonight's game, by the way, first pitch is at 8 o'clock on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Tomorrow, you're going to be so sick of us.
Never.
Tomorrow, we're going to have an hour pregame show when we'll take your calls. And then we're going to have 2-hour postgame show after the Jays and Rangers wrap up that series. It's a long day, Barker, but I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun. I got to say this, watching fans, seeing fans in the stands yesterday, I was... Probably for the first time during this whole pandemic, I was kind of thinking, you know what? I need to get back into a ballpark. I really need to get back into it. I need to get back into a ballpark. And we're watching right now as we talk, we're watching limited fans at the Twins Tigers game. God, just look at that though. It's nice. It's sunny. Man. I'm pining for some real live baseball.
Hopefully sooner than later.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Fernando Tatis Jr. completely shred his shoulder yesterday. I don't want to oversell it, but
you're close.
It was not good. Mm-hmm. And you know, we talked about it when you came in. Guys who've played the game, I imagine you watched that swing. You saw him go down, and
You knew right away.
Guys, yep. My thought immediately went to the guys who'd played games and who must have,
I've done it
must
before.
Have seen that happen. Well, we want to talk about that. Fernando Tatis Jr. suffered what is believed to be a separated shoulder, taking a swing last night. The backstory to this is he has had an issue, Now, this is according to the MLB Network. So he has had an issue with the shoulder popping out going back to last year. Apparently, it happened a couple of times in spring training where the shoulder popped out. So I don't know what to make of this. I do know that this is a guy who's on like a 78-year contract. So you would think if it was, you would think if it was something that was deadly serious, you know, there would have been some, there would have been, well, I was going to say that. I don't know if there'd necessarily be some reticence on the part of the tech or the San Diego Padres to give a guy that contract, but it did not look good. We'll talk about it when we come back, and a little bit of breaking news before we go to the break. The Toronto Catholic District School Board is closing all schools until April 19th, starting tomorrow, due to rising COVID-19 cases. Again, you can go to 680 News for more details on that. The Toronto Catholic District School Board closing all schools until April 19th, starting tomorrow, due to rising COVID-19 cases. Back with some stuff and Fernando Tatis Jr. This is Baseball Central.
Swing and a miss, and Tatis hurts himself on the swing. Fernando goes down after strike three and appears to be clutching his arm. They had the shoulder problem during spring training.
Yeah,
that shoulder would pop out from time to time.
Yep.
And you kind of wonder if that's the situation here as he's holding that arm as he walks off on the swing, strike three. Something that Jace Tingler said that he has managed throughout his career, but
yeah,
this time he goes down on the swing and kind of holding that arm along the side. Martin Rogo, the head trainer, coming up the stairs there, and Fernando headed to the clubhouse.
So on that follow through, and that's where he cradles it immediately to the belt buckle. The left shoulder.
That San Diego Padres TV network. The call of the pitch. Fernando Tatis Jr. will have an MRI tomorrow, we're told. Not today. That's the latest that we're hearing. Kevin Barker, you saw the swing. You know, and one of the things, the giveaways to me about how serious an injury is, you see Buster Posey's reaction to it?
Uh-huh.
Giants catcher, he just like took his mask off and just walked out. Like, you know, guys know, right? Guys who've played the game know.
Yeah.
Again, the initial indication was a separated shoulder. I mean, who knows if there's ligament damage. You heard that the shoulder has popped out during spring training. It's something Jace Tingler, the Padres manager, said, something that was managed going back, I guess, for a couple of years. Bark, you've done the same thing, haven't you?
I have. My first week that I was a professional baseball player in Ogden, Utah, it was like my third game. I took a big, giant swing like these guys do. When you take a big, aggressive, giant swing like Fernando Tatis Jr. does, it's got nowhere to go. Something has to stop it. And when you go as far behind your shoulder with the barrel as he does, that shoulder tends to want to roll. Every time you want to extend and sort of one-handed and your wrist starts to turn, that starts to turn your shoulder. And the further that thing gets behind your head or your shoulder, the better chance you got of doing that. I did that on one of those big giant swings. I was young, you know, thought I was the greatest thing since sliced bread. Took a big giant hack. It popped out of socket. Trainer came out, told me to take a deep breath. I blew it out. It popped back in. I had the issue for 16 years. I actually had to change my approach because of it.
How so?
Because every time I would take a swing and not be on time and almost have to catch up because I was a one-handed guy. Now most people that hold the bat when I played with two hands, with two-hand finish, were closer to the plate. Like guys that would stand closer to the plate didn't really need the barrel to have length through the hitting zone. They could be in and out, where guys that stood right on top of the plate, they basically wanted the ball away to be right down the middle.
Right.
And the barrel could be in the zone, out of the zone quick, and they would do the two-handed finish. and do that thing. I wasn't a guy who could do that. I needed to be a little bit off the plate, and I needed extension with my barrel on the ball away. So I would want to get down and through it and have the big finish above my head. Well, occasionally I wouldn't get to that point of down and through it, and I'd be playing catch-up, and it would get more side. My finish would be sideways, and it would go directly across basically my chin and end up behind my shoulder, the barrel would, and that's when I would start to feel that rollover. And you would have to make serious adjustments. You know,
sounds gross.
You can tell, like Javi Baez. So I don't know how that's not happened to him. He takes that big, giant hack, and it's almost like out and around, and you can see his wrist turn, and you can actually look at his shoulder and watch it do those kind of things. You don't have to do that aggressively to have good finish. When is the last time you saw a guy just take a massive, giant swing and hit the ball hard? It's rare. Normally, when a guy hits the ball hard, it is under control. It's quiet. It's short and quick, and it's got that big finish to it. You know, it's not that big herky-jerky around finish. It's that big finish, and he holds it. It's that kind of thing. So it's you know, hopefully it is just what I went through, which is a pop-out, and they can pop it back in. It'll take a week or so for it to get strong enough to where he's even mentally thinking that, you know, if I do release, I think he's more of a two-hand guy. I do. You know, he's a long-arm guy. I think he stands a little bit far away from the plate, but he is long-armed.
Was it his throwing shoulder?
No.
That popped out?
No, it's his body. It was his left arm.
Okay, all right.
It was It was his bottom hand.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was his bottom hand.
I was going to say, if it's a throwing shoulder.
No, it's his bottom hand. So, you know, top hand always is the one that comes off the back.
Okay.
So it's your bottom hand. But it'll have to be an adjustment. Hopefully it's not, you were here in 5 months. Yeah. If it's a pop out, it won't be 5 months. I mean, no. Five months
would suggest ligament damage and it would suggest a broken bone.
Call
maybe
me crazy. I didn't miss a game. You say what you want, but I was, and mine completely popped out where, look, it was real hard to zip my pants up with my right hand because, you know, I was afraid of it coming in and out. And it still does it occasionally now when I do push-ups. I got to pay attention to my shoulder and make sure that, it, you know, but it's one of those things that it'll make you think about your approach and how quietly you can get to the baseball and how smooth you can get to your finish. Quieten that thing down a little. Mm. I mean, it's all throughout the entire league. You know, it's amazing it doesn't happen more than
guys
it does.
Do you think guys will see that and go,
No, because it hasn't happened to them yet.
Yeah.
And the way they're doing it works. That's why you don't change. It's like, why don't you hit it where they ain't? Because they're standing, nine people standing on one side of the field. Well, this is how I got to the big leagues.
Right.
Same kind of thing. For baseball's sake, you hope he gets back sooner than later.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and for the Padres' sake and for my sake, because I picked him to go to the World Series. And without him in the lineup, you can throw that right out the window.
So we mentioned a little earlier that the Toronto Catholic District School Board is closing all schools until April 19th, starting tomorrow due to rising COVID-19 cases. The Toronto District School Board has now announced that it will also close schools. So we know that the Toronto Catholic District, Toronto District School Board, both closing schools. Peel, I believe, announced that they were closing schools yesterday. And again, go to 680 News for more details. I'm sure there will be a few more closures to be announced soon as we try to figure our way out of, through, whatever, the pandemic. What do you think of seeing all those fans in the stands yesterday? It was a little odd, wasn't it?
It was a little,
especially the fans behind home plate. That was a little odd.
I didn't know how to take it, to be honest with you, and I still don't. I don't know how it's odd. It's been forever since I've seen it, and we're not allowed to go do that. And you know, it's.
I mean, as long as the player, my thing is, as long as the players are safe, right? And people are going to say, "What do you mean?" But look, if you're not going to wear a mask in the stands, that's your prerogative. And if your fans, if those sitting around you, your friends sitting around you, aren't wearing masks, that's their prerogative as well. But my concern would be somehow the players getting sick as a result of this. And I know a lot of people weighed in on it in social media, and I'm like, you know what, with all due respect, given what's going on here, probably not a good time for Canadian smugness when it comes to what folks in the rest of the world are doing and not doing when it comes to the vaccine. We should probably just worry about our own little house on fire here before we start criticizing the way other people are going about doing things. But it was
a lot of people there.
It was a lot of people.
And we
25% tonight now.
I don't think that's right. I thought so too, and that's what I'd read. I'm pretty sure that Dan Shulman had said that he had heard, and that everybody was being told now that they're selling as many tickets as they can, so you can come and. I'm pretty sure that's what he said.
Well, the Texas Rangers then. You know, the Texas Rangers are making money during this because they made money. Well, they were the host for the World Series, so they had fans in the stands there. I'm not seeing anything further on that. We'll check into that. My understanding was 25% for game two, but the way things change, nothing would surprise me. This also good news for Canadian baseball, for baseball in general, but the Chicago Cubs have announced that they are planning to erect a statue to Fergie Jenkins, which could be unveiled as early as 2022. It will be at Wrigley Field, obviously. So there you go. That's a great tribute for a guy who, I always tell people, you know what, everybody knows who Fergie Jenkins is. Most people know what he did. Just look at his numbers. That's all I tell. Just look at the numbers and let them rattle around in your brain for a minute. And
well deserved.
Yeah, it is well deserved.
Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Yeah.
What does Tanner Roark need to do to be decent?
I mean, the easiest thing against this team, I mean, this sounds really dumb, really easy, but I really think it makes a difference against the Rangers is strike one. I wish I had something more, but against this team, to me, strike one. What do you think? I mean, you're going to be more detailed than me. I know. What are you looking at?
Well, strike one's the obvious, but yeah. How you throwing strike one? Down the middle, you're going to ask for another ball because it's 90, and it's not moving a ton, and I know he's canned the sinker, and, you know, he wants to – yeah, you know, it's up and down, in and out. He wants to – he has to hit the corners. He's got to, you know, not fall into any sequences. The breaking ball's got to have a little bit more bite to it. The changeup's got to be better. It's got to have sink to it. You know, if you – I'm not saying say a little prayer, but
light a candle.
You could think about it.
Yeah. Virtually. Someone's got to set up a virtual candle lighting thing. We'll be back tomorrow, an hour before first pitch, and then 2 hours after the final pitch. So it'll be Blue Jays or Baseball Central pregame and Blue Jays talk/Baseball Central postgame. Don't go anywhere. Lots of baseball talk ahead. Dan Shulman joins Stephen Brunt and myself. CJ Nitkowski as well. We're going to talk a little tandem pitching. Writer's Block is next.